Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us on our analyst and investor call as we review 2022 and I look forward to 2023. Because Adam mentioned, I'm joined with Shane, Tara, Declan and Ian here this morning, and you'll hear from some of my colleagues later. It's no exaggeration to say that 2022 was a milestone year for Cairn. It was our first full year out of COVID-19, and we certainly put the foot to the floor in terms of delivery. We have scaled our delivery platform and closed 1,526 new homes in 2022, one third of which were social affordable and affordable. Cairn is certainly playing an increasing influential role in tackling Ireland's housing crisis for first-time buyers, for people looking to trade up and trade down, institutional buyers, and for the state. The delivery trajectory accelerated in the second half of 2022, and I'm pleased to say that this momentum is carried through into this year. Delivery of this scale and nature is enabled by huge investment in our work in progress. In 2022, our financial commitment to work in progress is 470 million. That commitment will be even greater this year. This in turn is enabled by operating profit, which has grown to over 100 million in 2022. Before I bring you through the presentation, I'd like to sincerely thank all of my colleagues throughout the business in Cairn and also across our subcontractors and suppliers who continue to work hard to deliver high quality homes for people in Ireland. And now to the key financial highlights, if you want to turn to slide 3. As I mentioned in my intro, the company closed 1,526 new homes in 22, a very significant increase of 36% on the previous year. And 495 of these were delivered to our state partners. With a 46% increase in revenue to 617 million, we delivered an operating profit of 103 million, almost entirely delivered from our core house building activity. And this does represent a 76% increase in 2021. Our higher gross margin of 21.7% was supported by many factors, not least that Cairn is generating appropriately higher profit margins from our more capital-intensive apartment projects. Our operating margin has therefore increased by nearly 3% in the year, from 13.8% to 21 to 16.7%. During a challenging year, and to underpin 2023, our net investment in construction work in progress is 71 million. Our total investment in our business today, as you can see from the slide, is just shy of 1 billion between our land bank and work in progress on our active sites. We are particularly pleased to be making progress towards our 15% ROE target with an 11% outturn in 2022, a significant jump from the 6% delivered in 2021. On shareholder returns, ordinary dividends were declared at 42 million. Which brought our total shareholder returns to 117 million for the year. And today we are announcing a 40 million buyback, which Shane will cover in more detail in his finance section later. On to slide 4, operational highlights. We'll speak later about the current market conditions and how we are looking ahead, but it is very encouraging that at this early stage in the year, the company has a current closed and forward sales pipeline of over 1,500 new homes and in excess of €500 million in revenue. Included in our forward sales pipeline are 300 units which will be delivered next year in 2024. And as this year progresses, we will look to continue to grow this longer term sales pipeline. We are extremely confident in the opportunity that lies ahead for Cairn. We have backed this up by increasing our workforce in 2022 by 30%, increasing our new homes commencements by 30%. Increasing our work in progress spend, as I already mentioned, to 469 million, and also by strategically investing in planning consented land in early 2022, all of which in part will support our ambitious and predictable growth trajectory this year and future years. This investment is not only important for our shareholders, but it is critical for how our subcontractors plan and scale their businesses in support of ours. They need to know and trust that Cairn will deliver on the growth plans that we have committed to them and that we will support the 3,500 that are employed full-time across our active sites. Later in the presentation, Tara Grimley will bring you through some real progress in our sustainability strategy and execution. I'm particularly proud that the company has set our Scope 1, 2 and 3 carbon reduction targets and we are moving closer to the top of the class on our CDP score, having been awarded an A-minus grade in our 2022 CDP submission, up from a B in 2021. I'm not used to looking at A's on report cards, Sarah, and I can take no credit for this one, but it's a great achievement by the team to have achieved an A-minus grade in 2022. Slide 5, sales pricing in 2022. You can see across our various customers, sales prices increased with a pretty consistent average of about 6% across the business. Our average starter home price is $366,000 during the year, and at this price point, we continue to see significant realizable demand from first-time buyers. They are also now much better supported by government, with the recently introduced First Homes Shared Equity Scheme added to help to buy support, and a slight improvement in the macroprudential lending rules. The combined effects of this is allowing more people to realize their dream of owning their first home. Scaling these effective measures is our only call out for policymakers and government this morning. Build cost inflation during the year was substantial, but we managed to leverage our scale and track record to limit its impact to 20,000 per new home completed. And moving on to slide 6, the analysis of our sales. Looking at our buyer profile of our sales last year, our market was roughly split into four quarters between institutional sales, including successful completions and handover on apartment schemes like Griffith Woods and Shacklin Park, first-time buyer homes sold across 10 different developments, trade-up, trade-down homes sold across 5 different developments, and as I mentioned earlier, an increase in the number of homes that we delivered for state partners. In terms of sales rates, the company achieved an average in excess of 4 new homes sold per week per active selling site, and quarter one has seen us maintaining that impressive sales rate. Moving on to slide 7. And as many of you know on the call, home ownership can transform people's lives, both in terms of their family well-being and also financially. It is appropriate, we feel now, to also think about monthly energy costs when one compares the cost of owning or renting a home, given the significant cost savings associated with a new A2 rated starter home. Assuming that a customer qualifies for full state support, the total monthly cost of energy and mortgage repayments combined is more than 50% lower than the high rents and higher energy bills those people would face for a standard rental home in the market. Even in a rising interest rate environment, this gap is very likely to remain very significant. Slide 8, and some commentary around our supply chain collaboration and build cost inflation. I mentioned earlier that in 2022, each home cost us $20,000 more to build, and I'm pleased to say that the expected build cost inflation for this year will fall significantly to approximately $10,000 per unit. Our scale, a longer-term committed pipeline of orders, and subcontractor packages is a great benefit to us. Broader industry new site commencements actually fell by 12% in 2022 in comparison to our 30% increase in new starts. Our central procurement function is leading to greater penetration of manufacturers at source to provide not just better pricing, but better product quality, control, and consistency. Today, we are circa 78% procured on our active sites for 2023 and 54% procured for 2024, reflecting the strength and trust developed between Cairn and our supply chain. I'm going to pass you over to Shane to bring you through our 2022 financial performance and 2023 guidance, and I'll talk to you a little bit later.
Thank you, Michael, and good morning, everyone. I'm delighted to present a record set of financial results for Cairn to you this morning, as well as reiterating the very strong outlook for our business that Michael gave you just now. Over the next few minutes, I will walk you through our 2022 financial results, as well as our forward-looking guidance. Starting with slide 10, you'll see that we made substantial financial progress in 2022. Continued profit generation up 87% in 2022 has enhanced return on equity growth and shareholder returns, with the balance sheet size reduced by 4% as a result of returns to shareholders. with some key call-outs this morning. Revenue of more than $617 million from 1,526 unit sales closings in the year. Further strengthening of gross margin up to 21.7% in 2022. OPEX investment that has remained broadly in line with the H1 run rate that we reported in September. That critically enables innovation and evolution across a number of key disciplines, including construction, IT, and health and safety. We anticipate the top-line growth combined with well-considered investment in OPEX will continue to drive operating leverage expansion into 2023. Delivering $103 million of operating profit, equating to operating margin of in excess of 16.7%, demonstrates the robust fundamentals of our business. And we also returned more than $115 million to our shareholders in that period by way of dividends of more than $40 million and $75 million of share buybacks. And today, as Michael has outlined, we've announced a final dividend for 2022 of 3.1 cent per share. A net asset value of 110 cent per share at the end of 2022 demonstrates the strength of our balance sheet. That includes our wholly owned land bank of almost $630 million, most of which was acquired at very competitive prices. A forward order book of more than 1,500 units and $500 million in value, as well as our proven and ever-increasing operating platform, all of which makes for a very compelling valuation thesis for our business. Turning to slide 11, this demonstrates the strength of our forward order book. As of today, we have forward sold in excess of 1,500 units with a net sales value of more than $534 million. More than 1,200 of those units are expected to complete in 2023. This represents more than two-thirds of our sales target for the year forward sold. The growth in both units and value of our forward order book compared to previous years is supported by increased investment in WIP. In terms of the value of these forward sales, we are approximately 1.6 times covered on our closing WIP balance at the end of 2022. Turning then to slide 12, our balance sheet position continues to be supported by land at historic low cost and the WIP investment backed by our forward order book of more than 1,500 units. At $339 million, our WIP supports an order book with a value of $534 million and represents an increased net investment of more than $70 million compared to a year earlier. And when you consider that we also increased shareholder returns by more than $77 million compared to the previous year, our net debt grew by just less than $40 million. At the end of last year, we still had available liquidity of almost $200 million after all those returns and increased investment. Our net asset position of approximately $750 million is after shareholder returns of more than $200 million. At just 17%, our debt-to-GAV ratio leaves us very well capitalized to leverage the continued strong demand for our product. We have outlined the cash flow movements during 2022, turning to slide 13. We maintained an available liquidity position of $200 million through strong sustained cash generation as we continue to scale and make significant shareholder returns. Our net debt position increased by less than $40 million despite the returns to the shareholders in that period of $117 million and significant WIP investments in unit growth delivery. To contextualize that a bit further, this investment in WIP of $470 million will enable us to increase our unit output again in 2023 by between 15 and 18%, following volume growth of 36% in 2022. Turning to slide 14, we outline the value that we have and will continue to create for our shareholders. The growth opportunity for us is very significant. The continued monetization of our land bank as we build and sell more units will allow us to generate operating cash of over more than 50% than the net profits generated into the medium term. Having returned $40 million to shareholders during 2021 and a further $117 million in 2022, we have today announced continued progression in our ordinary dividend payments as well as a further $40 million share buyback. Moving to slide 15, our capital allocation strategy over the last 3 years has seen us continue to invest substantially in our WIP profile, as well as make well-considered ROE-enhancing investments in land, that will deliver units for us in the near term. Increased profitability coupled with shareholder returns of 157 million since 2021 have seen us increase our ROE from just 2% in 2020 to 11% last year. Looking forward, our journey to a 15% ROE will represent more than 36% growth compared to 2022. This will be delivered through continued P&L progress and balance sheet efficiency. And this is also underpinned by a net asset value that is already 13% higher than last night's closing share price. We will continue to distribute excess capital through a progressive dividend policy as well as other distributions, as evidenced by today's dividend and share buyback announcements. And finally, to recap on guidance on slide 16, the company continues to make progress towards our 15% ROE target. Our close and forward sales order book, along with a proven track record of delivery, allows us to deliver strong 2023 guidance. We are therefore confidently guiding in excess of 650 million of revenue from 1,750 to 1,800 unit sales closings, gross margin of 21% for the year, continued growth in operating profit, as well as declaring a final 2022 dividend of 3.1 cents per share today. We expect to distribute 40 to 50% of profit after tax by way of ordinary dividends in 2023, and our 40 million share buyback announced today will form another part of our 2023 capital returns. Thank you for your time this morning, and I'll now hand you back to Michael.
Thanks, Shane, and good morning, everyone. We're just on slide 18 of the deck here now, and here we detail some of our environmental highlights and, in particular, the progress we've made in setting our ambitious decarbonisation targets. We submitted our greenhouse gas reduction targets covering scope 1, 2 and 3 for verification to the Corporate Gold Standard Science-Based Targets Initiative, which is aligned to a 1.5-degree trajectory, and we are in the process of further developing our climate transition plan. As part of our Scope 3 measurement of energy in use, we've completed life cycle assessments on all of our house types, including our duplex and apartment specifications. We've added technological and material solutions for achieving Scope 3 reductions in our new homes, including air source heat pumps, light gauge steel and timber frame solutions. Undertaking these LCAs allows our in-house pre-construction design and technical teams to understand the embodied carbon in our homes and determine the best ways to reduce it at the earliest stages of our design process. In relation to scope 1 and 2 emissions, you can see on the slide there that we have made incremental progress from 2019 in reducing our scope 1 and 2 GHG emissions. And in 2022, we partnered with a third party to supply hydrotreated vegetable oil for use in all plants and machinery across all of our active sites in Ireland, meaning diesel is no longer purchased, which will substantially reduce our scope one emissions in the coming years. And as Michael mentioned earlier in his presentation, in recognition of all of our carbon reduction achievements and ambitions, we were delighted to be awarded an A- rating from the Carbon Disclosure Project, an improved score from our initial B rating received in 2021 following our first full submission. During 2022, we also implemented the Home Performance Index certification for all of our new development schemes. The HPI is a green building certification specifically designed for the Irish market. It's verified by the Irish Green Building Council and is seen as best in class for sustainability design and build residential developments in Ireland. Biodiversity remains a key focus for us, having integrated it into our executive remuneration strategy in early 2021. We continue to realise our biodiversity net gain ambitions, with 100% of our new sites commencing to have a biodiversity baseline assessment completed and an associated net gain strategy developed at the planning and design phase. Turning then to the next slide, one of our major achievements under our social pillar in 2022 was that Cairn retained its Great Place to Work certification for a second consecutive year and was recognised as one of Ireland's best workplaces, ranking in the top 20 best places to work in the large company category. Some of the proof points that contributed to that certification being retained include having received silver level accreditation from the Irish Centre for Diversity and the ongoing work of our Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Forum, establishing a mental health awareness partnership with the Lighthouse Club charity, and the publication of our second gender pay gap report, noting progress made in 2022 and how we intend to further close that gap. On the right-hand side of the slide there under governance, you can see that investment in sustainability, facilitated through our sustainability-linked loan facility, is fully aligned with our decarbonisation and social strategies, and more specifically, greenhouse gas emission reductions, biodiversity net gain targets, and people-related targets. We continue to improve on our sustainability reporting, and further details of each of the items I've touched on this morning will be included in our second annual sustainability report, which will be published in the coming weeks with our 2022 annual report. Turning then to my final slide and focusing on health and safety, which is our number one priority here in Cairn and the key element of our social pillar. We have maintained our grade A for a second consecutive year under the Safety Cert programme, with three new training programmes also delivered during 2022. We launched our internal health and safety rewards initiative, which is a weekly reward scheme recognising excellence in health, safety and environmental practices. As you can see there at the bottom of the slide, we have also invested in training an additional 17 mental health first aiders during 2022, taking our total to 31, with plans to extend these services further in 2023. Thanks all. Michael, I'll hand back to you.
Thank you, Tara. Appreciate that. So I'm going to move you on to slide 22, and I'll talk a little bit about the macro environment and how we are looking ahead with optimism. There are some very positive indicators that are worth highlighting here. Firstly, Ireland's population is growing. Our population has grown by over 360,000 in the last 6 years, but quite incredibly in that period, our working population has actually grown by 490,000 people. Exchequer returns are exceptionally strong and look like they will remain so into 2023. Household balance sheets are amongst the healthiest in Europe, and Ireland's economy continues to be a top performer. Importantly, we have a supportive and functioning mortgage market, which grew significantly last year. Housing output, a fundamental requirement for our functioning economy and society, remains Ireland's biggest challenge. But government policies and initiatives are increasing, and we are seeing clear evidence that they are starting to have the impact. First-time buyers are better supported, and affordable rental homes through initiatives like cost rental are being prioritised. Potential homeowners in apartments are now being financially supported for the first time through the Croí Cónaithe initiative, which we welcome. The government has also set a target of delivering 144,000 new social and affordable homes through various state entities by 2030. Cairn today is a strategically important and credible partner for the state in helping to achieve this objective. We will continue to strive to offer competitively priced homes for all of our private customers and deliver value for the state allied with timely delivery. Particularly our market lead position in apartment delivery will allow us to offer scale solutions in this regard. And moving forward to slide 23. 23 is a summary of our forward-looking strategy. It calls out some of the ingredients of our scaled operating platform, our quality low-cost land bank, and the planning successes that we've achieved. We outline our diverse range of customers for whom we continue to provide high-quality and well-located homes. We also show how we create value for our important stakeholders, including our shareholders, our direct and indirect workforce, and broader society. As we grow, we continue to reinvest in our business and housing output, ultimately creating value for all of these stakeholders. And moving on to slide 25, I thought it would be appropriate to bring you up to date on how we are progressing with Ireland's largest new suburb. I'm pleased to report that we've made great progress at Clonburris in recent months, not only with the level of infrastructure works well underway, but most importantly, that we will complete and occupy our first family homes in this new community in the current year. Plumbers represents an incredibly exciting opportunity for us. Its scale, low-cost land bank, location, and supporting state grant funding all mean that we will be able to deliver thousands of new homes at accessible price points close to Dublin City for many years to come. And moving on to slide 25. As we look ahead to this year, we are again looking to grow our volume by 20%, delivering between 1750 and 1800 new homes, following consistent year-on-year growth in previous periods. You can see from slide 25 what that growth trajectory looks like, and on the lower half of the page, the 1500 new homes that we have forward sold. This is a clear indication of the demand backdrop, and more specifically for the quality new homes that we at Cairn build. So to wrap up today's presentation on slide 26, the Irish economy looks to be in robust health. The supply-demand imbalance continues to worsen. However, the government is responding with decisive policies. Our business will continue to succeed. We will grow our volumes, our revenue, and our profitability. We do hope that we will not be an outlier in that regard, as Ireland desperately needs a broad, sustainable and much wider house building sector. We will continue to apply a strategic approach to capital allocation, but our significant cash generation in the years ahead will allow us to distribute surplus capital to our shareholders, while importantly achieving our targeted 15% ROE. Thank you all for your continued support of our business, and importantly, your time this morning on a very busy day. I will now hand you back to Adam, who will manage our Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question today, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure your headset is fully plugged in and unmuted locally. That's star one to ask a question. And the first question today comes from Shane Carberry from Goodbody. Shane, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, guys, and well done on what was a really solid 2022. Three from me, if I may. Firstly, on the order book and, the significant tick-up that we've seen in the order book, particularly between now and year-end. Could you give me a little bit more colour on kind of what you're seeing there in the background? Michael, you talked about kind of some of the demand-side stimulus, so just how much is kind of shared equity helping? Have you seen any impact yet from kind of the mortgage lending rules moving from 3.5 to 4? Any colour there would be helpful. Secondly, just on the build cost inflation side of things, look, I think, kind of build cost inflation at circa 4% is a pretty reasonable place to be. So I know you've talked in the past about, you know, kind of collaboration with kind of the supply chain, et cetera. So are you starting to really see the benefits now, or just a little bit more colour in terms of that 4% would be helpful? And then lastly, just on the capital allocation side of things, I mean, significant WIP investment through 2022, I think it was net 70 million. How should we be thinking about kind of capital allocation priorities through 2023 and into 2024 as well? I know you've announced the buyback this morning, but kind of beyond that, given the significant amounts of free cash flow that you're set to generate.
Sure, Shane. Thank you. Look, thankfully, Shane, across on the order book, across all sectors, we're seeing a really strong start to the year. Shared equity at this stage, I think we have had 6 different schemes that have qualified where customers have bought homes benefiting from shared equity. It's probably too early for us to call it genuinely whether the impact of the mortgage rules or whether we have specific examples that we could call out there. But we all know the environment we're in with rising interest rates and with build cost inflation. So we absolutely welcome that kind of prudent, what appears to be quite a prudent change to the lending rules. The growth of our order book is also important, and I referenced the fact that we are now looking to extend and continue to extend the length of our order book and not just its scale. And that's important as we scale our apartment schemes. They are capital intensive. And we need to commit to that volume. So it's important for us to grow not just the short-term order book, which tends to be our starter homes, but also the longer term, which is probably more biased towards the apartment schemes. On build costs, Yeah, look, I think it's quite possible, Shane, that the broader market did have to suffer a bit more than the 20,000 per unit that we managed to hold our build costs last year. Sadly, we're past the first year anniversary of a war in Europe. None of us really knew how that would impact our business, and indeed it's had a much bigger impact than that on many people's lives. So I suppose we just continue to be prudent around how we cause the impact of the macro environment, the cost of living crisis, the inflationary environment, and some uncertainty. And I would probably suggest that Shane would agree that 10,000 number is a reasonably prudent number for us to call for this year.
Yeah.
And I think it's the right way for us to think about it. On the slide itself, which I didn't have a lot of time to go into, we talk about some of the things that we can do to mitigate, and obviously scale is one, but also, you know, we're now into 6th, 7th, 8th year of our relationships with many of the big subcontractors we do business with, and indeed the supply chain. Led by our commercial director, Fergus, we are and continuing to develop more central procurement initiatives. And I talked a little bit about how that allows us to go more directly to source. And that just gives us more meaningful conversations with the main manufacturers of a lot of the materials we use in our homes. And not just from a pricing perspective, as I said, but to absolutely guarantee quality and product consistency. We've probably come out the other side of a standardization journey that's taken us 3 or 4 years as well. So we build, as many of you know, very standardized homes, not just on housing, but also on our apartment schemes. It doesn't mean that we don't change elevations and we have different landscaping treatments, et cetera, et cetera. But fundamentally, the vast, vast majority of current homes that are built are standardized. And that just allows us to sort of leverage the value chain right through planning, design, pre-con and construction. So there are some of the factors that have probably helped us manage that build cost inflation as well as many other initiatives. And on your third question, I'll hand over to Shane. I think it's a capital allocation point, Shane.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning to you, Shane. Look, on capital allocation, we feel we're in a really strong position. I think one of the things we want to emphasize this morning is it's not just talking about what we're going to do, but it has to be underpinned by what we've done. I think reflecting on that ROE journey from 2 to 11% is in such a short period of time kind of shows what we've done. And I think that should give everyone on this call confidence around what we're going to do. So we're in the very strong position that we've got a really good land bank, competitively acquired, as we said on the call. We've got a lot of it through planning, and we've got a lot of cash resources as well. So what we were keen to emphasize this morning is that we're absolutely committed to driving the ROE as high as we can, as quickly as we can. And that will be done through a combination, well, first and foremost, through profit generation, which leads to cash generation. As I said on the call, like our cash generation, certainly for the foreseeable future, will be at least 50% higher than the profits that we throw off. So that gives us a lot of fuel to return capital to shareholders. And we think we've pointed that out again this morning, the fact we're doing another 40 million buyback. But I think more interesting as well for our shareholders is that we're investing in WIP, you know, where we see the opportunity. I think that's particularly important when you see the issues around broader supply and the demand supply imbalance in Ireland. And we are very confident that we can continue to return significant amounts of capital to shareholders and you can continue to invest in our business, which we think is a really good sweet spot for our business. So, and I think to have that underpinned by a dividend is really important as well, because that makes us very accountable to grow our profits every year, which we're confident that we'll do. As things stand, and there's good cash yield coming off that for our shareholders, which will be supported by share buybacks, which frankly, as we all know in the call, is a bit of a no-brainer where the share price is where it is at the moment, where it's trading so significantly lower than its net asset value. And when you look at our track record, particularly over the last couple of years, the compounded growth of ROE, we would be very confident that we will get to that 50% ROE target. So we will throw off a lot of cash this year. It does tend to be back-ended. We're very comfortable with the 40 million euro buyback, and there will absolutely be more returns to shareholders over time, which will be appropriately weighed up against all of the commercial opportunities that we see in the business.
Thanks, Shane.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Thanks, Shane.
The next question is from Johnny Cowper from Numis. Johnny, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks very much, Bill, for taking my questions. The first one would be on the work you're doing selling to the state now, and clearly it's a big feature of the Irish market. You've been clear that all of that work that you're doing is going to be on Cairn's own land. I'd be grateful for your thoughts on what the difference is in economics between building for the state on Cairn's own land relative to what it would look like if you were doing that on state or public land.
Yes. Yeah, you have to. I suppose just to put a bit of a backdrop on this and why outside of just a housing crisis is this government appropriately looking to increase its proportion of ownership, particularly to try and help the affordable rental crisis. We all know the situation with rental values and rental rates and costs in Ireland. We step back a little bit and look internationally. In order for the Irish government to own the number of homes, state-owned homes, that would just put it in the average of all of the EU27, it needs to increase state ownership by about 60,000 to 70,000 homes today. And to get the kind of upper quartile, to the better performance, you'd be double that. The state should own another 120,000 or 30,000 homes. And unfortunately, even the existing stock, even from an energy perspective, is we know the state's direct ownership has been declining since the 60s and 70s. So it's an absolute imperative that the government increases its ownership. Therefore, the government's fundamental question is, how do we achieve value, and how do we do this quickly, and how do we do it at scale? So it's up to us to absolutely illustrate to the government why they will absolutely and should deliver as many homes as they can on their own land, that Cairn can deliver comparative value, speed, scale, quality solutions quickly on our land. And the evidence, and I don't really want to get into specifics, but we can deliver, and I think we have illustrated this, completed homes, including our land cost and all other costs which are not actually comparable when the state builds directly, including development levies, Part 5 contribution, et cetera, we are still delivering homes cheaper than direct state builds on state land, including all of those costs and our land costs and our development margin. So I think that makes us a compelling partner. It doesn't mean that we want to discourage the state in any way from adding value to state-owned land, because bluntly, it is much more valuable when it has homes on it. So we think we're in a good position, but we have a responsibility as a business, as does our industry, to ensure that we can bring value to the state and help them increase the volume of state-owned housing, particularly for affordable rental.
That's very helpful. Thanks, Michael. My next question would be on the planning system and where you reapply for planning on sites such as Montrose. What opportunities do you have to improve the development potential of those sites by taking them back through planning?
I think you've seen some evidence of that in 2022. I've talked a little bit about some of the margin benefits of the planning gains that we've got, particularly on the apartment schemes. You know, we acquired Griffith Wood, for example, with planning permission for, if I remember rightly, about 160 units. We completed the development of 387 units. So that obviously improves our margin, even with allowing for the very significant increase in cost over that period of delivering those homes. So mix is important to us, we certainly feel that there are opportunities there in planning. However, we do already have a substantial portion of our land bank through the planning system, and we are probably now more fundamentally focused on putting our foot to the floor and increasing our volume and output, as evidenced by the target for this year. And while we're not in a position, we don't believe it's prudent to talk about future years, I think it's pretty clear from our presentation where our ambitions lie as a business.
Thanks. And my last question, perhaps one for Tara, is on your Scope 3 emissions targets, and clearly for the construction sector, you know, a large chunk of emissions are in the supply chain. Do you find that suppliers are willing to take action on this and help you work towards that target?
Absolutely, and it's a really good question actually, because we've been through 2022 having workshops with many of our tier one, tier two and tier three suppliers to understand where they're at on their sustainability ESG journey and their understanding of it. And it is a mixed bag. You know, we have some larger suppliers that would be very advanced in their carbon reduction strategies and transition plans purely because of the nature of the industry that they're in and the materials that they're supplying. And then we would have smaller contractors who this world would be quite new to them, and they would like us to help them with their carbon reduction story and partner with them to achieve this, because it's something that will help them with their marketing of their services to other companies as well. So I'd say it's a mixed bag, but I'd say there's a real appetite from all of our suppliers to get on the journey with us and to support us in what we need, and for us to then in turn support them in their requirements as well.
Yeah, I'd add to that, if I kind of could remind people, I think it's important to remind them that, you know, it's up to us to support our supply chain. This, if I reflect back on COVID-19, Shane told us he had 200 million of undrawn funds that he'd managed to negotiate for us previously, and we were able to draw that down, Shane, and support our subcontractors and in fact forward pay many of those suppliers to try and support them through that period. Mm. I think that brought us and further enhanced our relationships, and it means when we engage on things like our sustainability plans, where we have a captive audience there, but equally it's up to us to support them to try and get them on the journey with us.
Great, that's all really clear. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks, Johnny.
The next question is from Colin Sheridan from Davy. Colin, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks, and morning, guys, and congrats on a great set of results in 22. A few from me, if I may. The first one, just following up on Shane's points on build costs. Mind if you could maybe just give a little bit more colour on what you're seeing, differing trends on the labour versus material side and the makeup of those, that build cost inflation you're talking about. And I wouldn't usually push for this time of the year, but since you're so far forward procured into 2024, how that 4% is likely to trend into 2024 with more than 50% of the build costs already secured. Second one then is just on social and affordable, a bit of a follow-on from Johnny's comments. And I just wonder, you know, excluding Part 5, which we all sort of know how it works, when you're dealing with other government agencies, whether it's LDA or housing associations, how should we think about the economics relative to the private market? I mean, they're still buying at market value effectively. You know, is it the same margin we should be thinking about when you're doing social sales to those types of bodies versus being able to sell them yourself into the private market? And then finally, I guess just on land market and around Shane's comments on capital allocation, feels like an environment. I mean, you made the comment, Michael, about build costs likely being worse amongst smaller players and in the rest of the sector. It feels like they might be operating on tight margins and there's vacant site levies coming in and things like that. Does it feel like an environment where opportunities are coming down the line on the land market to maybe buy a little bit more as the year goes on, or have you seen any of those opportunities already? Thanks very much.
Thanks a million. I'll start with the last one. I think the time for us to be decisive, it wasn't a massive investment for us, Colin, but you know, we all know the challenges that the planning system has brought for our sector, and we're not immune to that. I suppose we were fortunate that, having bought our land bank in 2015 and 16, that we had managed to rework a very large portion of that through the planning system before some of the most recent court-based challenges became more prevalent. So that was good for us. But it still doesn't mean that as a business that we should not be opportunistic. I think we made some smart decisions in late 21 and early 22 to actually buy some land on the spot market with planning permission that would actually deliver units, a small number in 2022, but those sites we actually acquired will deliver close to 400 units, I think, Declan, in this current year. So we're absolutely alive to that. But as we look through the next two or three years, the number of schemes that we have coming through the system, indeed recent successes, would probably mean that Cairn's land buying activity will be quite limited for the years ahead. We have a substantial land bank. It doesn't mean we won't be opportunistic. Possibly, strategic land, long-term strategic land might be of interest, but maybe that might be more UK-style acquisition of option purchasing, et cetera, which really isn't prevalent in the land market in Ireland today. But that would be attractive. But more broadly, the land market remains fairly benign. It has been for a number of years. We haven't really seen, I actually believe most of the land inflation we saw in Ireland was probably between 2016-15, when it hit the floor, and probably quite quickly by 17 or 18. It's remained pretty benign for the last 3 or 4 years in my view. So it'll be interesting to see how the vacant site levy, what impact that will have, Colin. And I think once it's targeted towards land that is serviced as infrastructure is truly ready to build on, and all other constraints have been cleared, well, maybe it will be an effective measure. And we are in a housing crisis. Working backwards, your second question on the kind of economics around social and affordable housing, I think we need to think less about whether the margin we generate there is better or higher or lower than whether we would sell those homes privately. I think what we are doing is we are targeting the portion of our land bank that offers value to the state. It is generally at lower margins because we've got to drive efficiencies for the state there. But it also tends to be, in certain cases, at a slightly different specification. So it's important that we value engineer the projects. The fundamental difference between our model, to try and explain how we achieve that, and let's say the more traditional route of direct procurement on state land, is on the direct procurement route, Colin, as you probably know, the main contractor enters the fray at a very late stage in the value proposition. They are basically presented with a finished design, fully planned, fully consented. They're offering a contract situation for the state where often the entry contract price differs greatly from the exit price that the state pay. And that causes serious challenges. Our approach is very different. We have to absolutely value engineer every aspect of the delivery process. We have to ensure that we target some of these units on our lower cost land bank. We have to absolutely ensure we're designing the right sort of product. We have to ensure the specification is appropriate. And we have to make sure that our scale gives us efficiencies. So I don't really think about margin. I think about trying to bring value to the state because that's our responsibility. And if we do that and we can illustrate that, then it represents a long-term sustainable business for Cairn and not just an opportunistic business for us, if that answers that question. Labour and materials markets. I suppose it probably reflects back on the previous point when I said about labour that we felt it was important for us to meet the volume commitments we made to our supply chain, and that's particularly relevant to labour because the way to control labour costs in a construction company is to ensure that the vast majority of people working on your sites are employed full-time. If they're on a salary, then the conversation that you have with those or your subcontractors have with those employees is an annual conversation. and it tends to be a more controlled and more long-term relationship between the employee and their employer. You can only do that if you're offering consistency and real look-through on your pipeline and you're meeting those commitments. If, in my view, your volumes are moving up or down dramatically, that makes it really hard to keep your labor costs under control, because what it means is you've got to go back into the market and price individual work from subcontractors that probably might have worked for you a year or 2 years before, but that you had to stand down. So as a result, we think that the labor cost of our build is going to be very stable for the next 12 to 18 months. We are conscious of cost of living crisis. They're trying to support our people, and if our subcontractors need to continue to support theirs, we will absolutely be sympathetic towards that. But I suppose, most importantly, the commodities, which is where we see most of the risk, we're seeing some dramatic shifts down in certain commodities, and we're still seeing tightness in other areas. On an overall, I suppose, if I think I referenced it earlier, and I think Shane would probably agree with me, I think the 10,000 number that we've talked about and the 4% that you referenced feels like a prudent number for us. We feel that, and we feel it's the right environment to be prudent around where build cost inflation would be. So I certainly wouldn't be expecting any surprises outside of the things that we can't control, the broader macro environment, which probably does lead us to just be a bit more prudent at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's right, Michael. I mean, I think one thing to reflect on is there has been significant compounding increases in build cost inflation over the last number of years, and they're pretty much embedded now in the cost stack. So I think that kind of gives additional context to what Michael has just said. It is absolutely prudent, we think, to put it in, you know, what we said, at 10K per unit, but more fundamentally, you know, there have been significant increases in build cost inflation in the last number of years. And I think that's testament to our operating model, that you've still seen significant growth margin progression in our business in that context.
Understood. Thanks for that, guys.
Hey, Colin. Yeah, thank you.
The next question is from Luca Agarwal from Bank of America. Luca, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hello. Two quick questions from my side. One is on your sales and reservation rates going for this year. I can see that currently, based on the forward sales of March this year, it's around 2/3. Do you have any guidance on how you expect that to change over the years, over this year? And also your ASP for this year, any guidance on that? I've seen some competitors kind of lowering their ASP, so any guidance on that as well? Thanks.
Hiya, Luca. And when you say competitors lowering ASP, is that UK-based house builders, or where would that come from?
UK.
I suppose it is a very different market here, Luca. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have its challenges, but I think we did cover a lot of that, and I think it is important for us to kind of point out some of those differences. It doesn't mean that we as a business, and we never have guided on house price inflation. I think we kind of leave that to you guys. We can only talk about our more micro environment and how we see the business and how we see demand. And what we're seeing is really strong demand. And that's across the spectrum. The reason why we will grow our forward pipeline and has grown so much is that we believe that as we continue to scale, and particularly, as I said earlier, as we are building more and more apartments, it is important for us, and indeed our customers want to be able to forward commit to that pipeline, particularly whether it's state or institutional buyers. They need longer term planning, and whether it's on a forward commit or a forward fund, it tends to be contracted at a very early stage in construction, and that's important for us as we try and manage our sustainable growth level in the years ahead. So that's the main reason, as I said earlier, you know, current year is very well covered, absolutely, as you said, at roughly two-thirds. But we've already booked 300 units for next year. And I think when we come out and report again in June and September, I would be hopeful that kind of longer-term pipeline should continue to grow in our favour.
Okay, thank you.
Did I answer both your questions? I apologise if I didn't.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Was there another? Cool, thanks.
The next question is from Andy Murphy from Edison Research. Andy, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning, Andy Murphy from Edison. I'm going to break the mould and only ask for two, if I may. You talked in the statement about sort of the lack of delivery of apartments across the piece. I was wondering whether that implies that you'll be changing or replanning some of your sites to perhaps move from traditional housing to apartments, and if so, does that imply additional costs or delays? Or indeed a change of sort of future land purchasing in terms of the emphasis of the types of land. And then secondly, this question for Tara about sustainability targets on greenhouse and biodiversity. I was wondering if you could talk me through a little bit about whether that implies any additional costs to the business overall. And secondly, allied to that, you mentioned earlier on about pressure being applied to suppliers. I was wondering if there's any examples where pressure from your side has encouraged a building material supplier to up their game in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, or indeed whether you've actually switched suppliers because you weren't satisfied with an answer from a particular supplier. Thank you.
Okay. On the apartment side, Andy, I suppose, look, just to try and paint the picture, and I mentioned earlier about the really low level of state-owned housing in Ireland, and the challenges that any economy faces, particularly an economy that's absolutely trucking and has this widening gap of a widening cohort of you know, what we might refer to as that kind of stuck middle. They require support and they require affordable rental particularly, and therefore, you know, one of the ways of addressing that is not to only be dependent on the private rental sector, but for the state to have a much bigger ownership and play a bigger part. And we believe it's absolutely obvious that apartments must play a role in that. It doesn't mean they're the only answer. But just to give you some comparisons, in the UK, Andy, I think about 20% of people live in apartments. In the EU 27, around 50% of people live in apartments, and in Ireland less than 10% of people live in apartments. We have been allergic to heights, we've seen urban sprawl for decades, and unfortunately, and this is according to Eurostat research, it's very, very good research on the Eurostat website, it points out that not only is our housing stock wrong, but to maybe even not to the Tara's answers here, the energy efficiency of our housing stock is appalling, amongst the worst performers in Europe, because what a problem for Ireland is that we have a massive stock of large 3 and 4 bed houses. Many of them are underoccupied. In fact, the Eurostat research actually calls out the underoccupation of Ireland's housing stock. So what it kind of means is, which is pretty tragic, is that we have enough bedrooms to house our population, but we don't have enough individual units, and that's the reason. The reason for that is there's not enough of our 1 and 2 bed units. So we're in a strong position as a result of all of that. It doesn't mean we need to buy any more land. We already have a very significant land bank that allows us to build lower density, mixed tenure developments, but also to build apartments. And we believe that we were right to bring ourselves through that learning journey of improving our apartment output. It's been a steeper learning curve, but it started to pay. It started to reward us in our performance as a business, and it sets us up well.
Thanks, Michael. And Andy, just in relation to your two questions on the ESG space, taking the first one around additional costs, to the extent that we have introduced initiatives that are carbon reducing, so for example, say our scope one and our switch to HVO fuels, there's a very marginal change in the cost at present of that due to increased costs of diesel and fuel, as you know, in the macro climate at the moment. So I'd say for that one, that's quite marginal, and if anything, supply of the product is going to be more of a challenge of us there on a consistent ongoing basis as opposed to the cost. In terms of scope three, some of the items that we've already introduced there, like that I referred to in my presentation around heat pumps and timber frame. You know, we've been building A-rated energy efficient homes since, you know, 2019. They're NZEB compliant, so a lot of those costs are already absorbed as our business as usual as such. We do have to complete life cycle assessments to understand the embodied carbon in our product, and those are expensive, and there's no doubt about that, but there are efficiencies that can be gained through what Michael talked about in terms of standardisation of product, and we do manage those as much as we can. I suppose looking forward in terms of other things that we might do to reduce our carbon footprint, and in particular in Scope 3, the only real game-changing item for us is probably to look at something like passive house standards, and if you know the five key principles of that, you know, you're looking at things from airtightness to high performance window glazing. Again, you know, looking at that, we're going through feasibility studies on that now to consider everything from program impacts, costs, product availability, etc. And you know, all of that will be scoped out. There may be additional costs there, but you know, we're looking at it early enough. And as you know yourself, it's much better to build them in at the design phase and have to retrofit these buildings to be green. Certified buildings. So I would say we're managing that quite well. In terms of the upping of the game and of those suppliers that you mentioned or changing suppliers, again, it's not going to be a case of changing supplier because of just a cost. It'll be, you know, if we change our product and it's a change in supplier for that reason.
Or it's a new initiative,
exactly, and someone else offers it. that's the only reason I can see that we would change the supplier. It wouldn't just be a cost consideration.
A good example, Tara, of that is. So if you take, Andy, we piloted soil stabilisation around, I don't want to bore you too much with but if you take soil stabilisation, what that really means is that thousands of truckloads of inert material need to move on and off our sites. Soil stabilisation allows us to actually compress and keep the soil on site to avoid all of those truck movements. That's now, soil stabilisation is across five of our sites now in the current portfolio. We haven't just piloted that last year. So that's one example of how a new technology just changed behaviour rather than necessarily changing the supplier.
Exactly, yeah. I'd say there's enthusiasm among our supply chain to look at this with us. You know, there's always opportunities for the sector to be more innovative, and the more they're part of that journey with us and getting credit for some of those innovations and improvements in products to then sell on to other customers, you know, we're seeing a lot of good traction in that space.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
We have no further questions, so I'll hand back to the management team for any concluding remarks.
Nothing else from us, but just to thank you. I know it's a really busy day, and we're only one of many PLCs reporting today, so thank you very, very much for your time, your continued support, and we look forward to seeing many of you individually over the coming days. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.